First chapter of Daniel.
I'll be reading the entire chapter. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these 4 young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. One of the reasons I came to the book of Daniel is relationship evangelism. Now, that might seem a bit strange as you first hear it, but we here in this church, we have been working on this and will for some time. Relationship evangelism. So the book of Daniel provides us another direction, a little bit of a broader scope as we look at this context of relationship evangelism. If you remember last week, I told you we were going to look at the book of Daniel in 4 different ways. One of those ways was Daniel as the person, Daniel as the statesman, finding himself in a foreign world, in captivity, but yet he influenced that world and actually affected it, such that he found himself finally as a governor over this land. How much influence can a person have as governor over a land? Quite a lot, I would imagine, in certain parameters. So here we look at the man Daniel. And one of the reasons I came to this, of course, was its teaching overall. But for us, in our scope or in our aspect of looking at relationship evangelism. Here, Daniel has been taken into a foreign land. He was one of the first taken by Babylon. There were actually three exits of Israelites into Babylon. Daniel was among the first. Ezekiel, his parallel was actually taken much, much later. But Daniel spent the entire 70 years of captivity in captivity. And so he had a great amount of time in this country. He was there until the first year of King Cyrus. And I'll wait till later to explain who King Cyrus is and his actual work and how God used him. But while Daniel was in this land, while Daniel was this captive in a foreign land, he continued to live according to his beliefs. Look at verse 8 once again. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with royal food and wine, and he asked the chief officials for permission not to defile himself. This is looking at Daniel's faith. This is speaking of Daniel's religion, if you will. He did not take the food because the law forbid it. Now, there is some debate, there is some room for discussion here as to the exact reason that Daniel chose not to because the law said not to. Was it because it was not prepared according to Levitical law? Was it because the meats were from unclean animals? Or maybe it was because Daniel and the other guys were just a bit too young to be drinking. Actually, none of these are primarily the reason why Daniel did not take the food. Any of them could come into play, but the primary reason Daniel did not want to defile himself was that in the Babylonian culture, food and drink, food and wine were actually used in some context as a part of a worship service. They would sit down and have a feast and have a meal, and it'd be in the context of worship. And so animals would be sacrificed, foods would be eating, drinks and wine and such as that would be used during this time of worship. And so Daniel did not want to defile himself by taking food and drink that was actually a part of a worship service, worshiping idols. In his mind, taking that food as food for himself would actually be participating in the worship of idols. So he said no, because he wanted to stay true to his God in this way. But notice how Daniel said, no, I don't want to eat your food. I don't want to defile myself. Notice how he did it. In his denial, Daniel was neither rude, nor was he fanatical in any way. He simply said, I do not want to defile myself. He was polite. He was a gentleman about this whole thing. Now, he never yielded in his devotion to his principles. He never yielded in his devotion to the law of which he was raised on. But at the same time, he never allowed his devotion to principle be a format or a platform for him to be rude or for him to be fanatical, or for him to be one that would go off to extremes. One commentator called Daniel a true hero of the faith because he depended on God for his strength, not his fanatical actions. He depended on God to persuade the individuals who were his captors to allow him to be what he needed to be and yet at the same time remain in good place of this captivity, in a good state. And as we will see, Daniel's actions began to influence those around him, the guards, the chief officials, and eventually Nebuchadnezzar. In verses 11 through 16, we read once again, Daniel said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over them, verse 12, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance. He gave the authority to the man over him. He said, please allow us to do this, but you're still in charge. You judge us according to the standards, but allow us to do this. He talked reasonably with the man. This is teaching for us We live in a foreign world. We live under authority of others who are not Christians. We work for individuals who are not Christians. We go to school and stand before teachers who are not Christians. And we have a choice of how we act before them. We can act rudely, we can act fanatical, or we can depend on God to say, Lord, I want to honor you here in this place. So I pray for the teacher, I pray for the manager, I pray for the supervisor, whoever is over authority, has authority over me, and say, Lord, you work for them because I want to stay true for you. Here, Daniel affected the guards, but not only the guards. Look at verse 18. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them and found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better. Their actions influenced the king himself. Their actions influenced the king himself. Now, was this the intent? Was this Nebuchadnezzar's plan to bring these young men in and say, you know, I'm going to do what they say? That was Nebuchadnezzar's plan all along. No. If you read any history about Nebuchadnezzar, he ran throughout all the land seeking to make his kingdom as large and as big as possible. And he would bring the countries under his rule and he would bring them in and teach them and train them to be good Babylonians. Look at verse 3. The king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his official, of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility, young men without any physical defect. Handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, dropped down. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. What was Nebuchadnezzar's plan? My mama said to brainwash them. Fair word. And that's exactly what it was. Nebuchadnezzar had planned for these men who stood above the rest, in their physical appearance and in their intelligence and their wisdom. He said, these guys would make good servants in my court. I'll make good Babylonians out of them. He put them into training for 3 years. Trained them for 3 years and then they were to come into his court. Nebuchadnezzar's intent was not to be influenced by them, but to be the one who changed them and made them to be good Babylonians to live in his land. But God had another plan. Thank goodness. God had another plan. Verse 9. God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy. And we'll speak more about that just in a moment. But I want to draw this close to home for us. Each of us should be able to empathize with Daniel in this place. Every one of us in this room should have some level of empathy for Daniel. Because every one of us seated in this room finds ourselves out in the workplace, finds ourselves out in the community. Every one of us here has a TV sitting in their living room. We are subjected greatly to the influence of this world. And it is the intent of those in certain levels to influence us. To influence a culture in a specific direction or into a specific belief or into a specific understanding. Let me ask you a question. How did homosexuality become the norm today? How did it become the accepted way of life, as an accepted way of life? How did it become that way? It started in 1970 on a television screen. And through the years, the words, the lifestyle, the television shows. If you remember when the first homosexual was on a television show, it was at somewhat of a distance. Now the theme of the entire show. How did that come about? Through the influence of television and the major marketing medias. And now the church itself Many churches themselves accept it as a norm. We are influenced greatly every day by television, by magazines. Let me ask you a question. How many of you would be able to answer whether or not... I just lost his name. Who's Jessica married to? Who? No. Man, I lost my whole illustration. I love when that happens. Jessica Simpson. Nick. See, I knew I'd get it. How many of you could answer whether or not Nick and Jessica are still married or identify Paul's first missionary journey? Neither. Well, Nick and Jessica aren't married anymore. And the reason you know that, because you can go stand in the grocery line and that's what you'll see printed there every week. What is Nick doing this week? And we read that every week. That's the influence. That's the measure of influence. Also notice the height of which they put the magazines. Are they at 6 foot tall so I can read them? No, they're about 5 feet tall. How tall is your kids? Folks, that's a ploy. That's an instrument of influence. Our friends, our peers, our jobs. How many of us go to work every day and our ambition is to look good to the boss? Our ambition is to act in a certain way so that the people at work will accept me. How many of us go to work, maybe not outwardly, but at least subconsciously saying, I have got to do everything I can to look good in my job because this is who I am. This is my value system. This is what makes me who I am. Men, I am talking to you more than the ladies because I was there. I was there. Many times it was more important to me for my vice president to know who I was than my own wife. The influence is there. Daniel's a story in the Bible, but can we empathize with him? Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me ask you a question. We are in the world of influence. The question for us is, in which direction does the influence occur? Are you influencing your culture, your surroundings, your dynamics? Or is that culture influencing you? In which direction is it? I'd like to speak more practically here just for a moment in ways we can impact and influence our world. Whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in the school, whether it's in our community, our performance. We should be working hard not to become a liability, but we should be an asset. In our relationships, when you're in relationship with someone at work, do you participate in the gossip? When troubles arise, do you get involved in the name calling? Or do you rise above it and take the high road? Are you one that listens to the gossip? Are you one that participates in the scuttle that goes around through the workplace? Leadership. And I'm not necessarily speaking about formal leadership. Are you a leader? Are you one who sets a different pattern in the workplace? Ethical conduct. Today's workplace is suffering drastically because of the ethical conduct of the people. But if you are a formal leader, if you're a manager, if you own your own business, everyone's eyes are looking at you. So do you conduct yourself in a way that sets the trend for the company? Do you stand out among your peers? Do we create harmony rather than disloyalty and distrust? Are we positive in our views, or do we always have that negative, antagonistic attitude? Christians impact the workplace significantly. I learned that more when I became a pastor. All the dirty jokes stop when I walk into the room. Someone will say a curse word, and they'll turn around and apologize to me. Buddy, I don't care. I'd rather you not. But it's not me you need to worry about. Those of you in your workplace, at school, do they know you're a Christian? Do the dirty jokes stop? Does the language change when you walk into the room? Or do they continue to tell the same stories whether you're there or not? What are some things that can cause a negative influence that we Christians have direct control over? A lax attendance at work. Tardiness. Do you know coming in late for work is actually stealing? If you get paid from 8 to 5 and an hour for dinner and you show up at 10 minutes after 8, that's stealing. Dishonesty, carelessness, antagonism, lack of motivation, insubordination. Those are all things that can set you apart in a work or school atmosphere. Colossians 3, verse 22 through 4, 1. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when the eye is on you or to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Those of us who work have employment. We don't work for the individual who is in authority over us. They are merely a representative of God's authority. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for his wrong, and there is no favoritism. Now, for you who are in supervision, you who are managers, you who have people working under you, it says, masters, provide for your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. That portrays a representation. The master who works over you, your supervisor, your teacher, they are a representative in God's eyes before you. They represent authority. Our insubordination to them is sin. And those of you who have people working for you, it says treat them fair. Treat them right. Provide for them. And I know we have many men and women in here today who have people working for them. How did Daniel begin to influence this foreign land toward a believer's lifestyle? What did he do? How did he conduct himself? He first asked. He asked a simple question. Can I remain pure? Can I not partake of your food and not defile myself? He began a relationship with the individual who was in authority over him. He didn't throw his food tray at him. He didn't go on a hunger strike. He simply began a relationship with them. Then he followed his principles, and he stuck to his principles. Now, was all of this because Daniel was a strong fellow? Was all of this because Daniel was a good guy? Is all of this because that he was trained well through his Jewish teaching? Yes, that's a part of it, but something first happened. If you remember last week, I also said we would talk about the covenant. We would be speaking of God's covenant. Daniel did these things, but God did something first. God did something first. Three times here in this first chapter, it is identified God working. First of all, in verse 2, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. God said, you will be punished for your disobedience. That statement says God is true to his word. He delivered the Israelites into their punishment. Verse 9. God caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. Why did the guards listen to Daniel? Because God first moved in his life. Daniel was a good fellow, I'm sure, but it was because God first worked. And then verse 17, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams. Where did they get their talent from? It was from God. God said to Abraham so many years before, I will be your God and you will be my people. Here, these are testimonies of where God is being true to His word. You are God's people. You fall into that category of God's people. God said He would be your people. That means that in your prayers and in your life, God will work in your life as well. With that manager that you have a hard time with, have you prayed for him? Her. Have you prayed for her? That teacher at school that you have such difficulty with, have you prayed for them? The workmate that sits near you and cusses like a sailor. And it's just unnerving. Do you pray for them? God will move in those places because He said He would be good to His people. The promises of God are true. We must hold Him. We must pray for those things. God intentionally placed Daniel in this environment for a purpose. And Daniel needed to set himself apart. Daniel acted ethically, morally, honestly. He gave a good rapport. But see, there's a reason here. It was not to acclaim Daniel as a good man, because God's purposes were being set in place. Nebuchadnezzar, in just a little while, we're going to read that Nebuchadnezzar turned to Daniel to interpret his dreams. Now, if Daniel had not set himself apart by living an ethically honest, gentlemanly life, do you think Nebuchadnezzar would have called him in to ask for his advice? No. But he showed himself to be different. Let me ask you the same question. Anyone in your work group, anyone at your school runs into difficulty, runs into problem, do they come and ask your advice? Or are you the last person they would ask? That decision many times is made on the history you have. What kind of influence have you portrayed? What kind of life do you exhibit? Do you show yourself as one who could be relied on and has integrity? When it comes time to speak of Jesus Christ in your office or workspace or in your family or in your home, and you begin speaking of Christ, are they going to listen? Or is the statement going to be, who are you to talk to me about Christ? I entitled the sermon, Live as a Believer. Daniel had to live as a believer and be true to his faith because God was setting him in place to be that counsel to a king. You are a messenger as well. What story are you delivering? What story are you delivering to your surroundings? Do you live as a believer? Let us pray. Father, I pray you would work in the lives of the people, that you would move in the lives of the people as you have done for Daniel, that you would move in the lives of the people around us, and let us live a faithful and true life. Let us have integrity. Let us have good ethics, good moral standards, and let us live them out so that the people might see. Not that I'm a good person, not that I'm strong, but that God has worked in my life, and I am simply an exhibit. Father, let us live as believers in a sinful and wicked world. In Jesus' name, amen.